From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
It was basically an exercise to, put together a balanced budget. That's all it was. It's just making sure that the pluses and minuses added up. There's no agreement in the group. We just agreed that we would present this to the leaders and see how they react.
I think the framework is there. What's not a part of it was not the charge with dealing with any of the turnaround agenda items.
That's a couple of Democratic lawmakers. Representative Fred Crespo and Senator Heather Staines both participated in bipartisan negotiations on a budget framework. There's been a lot of discussion that we could be inching closer to getting a full budget deal, but it's not there yet, and we'll discuss that. Also, today, social service agencies have been last in line for state money. They might get some, we'll see. And changing how legislative districts are drawn couldn't be that easy, could it? A lawsuit's been filed to keep a plan off the ballot this fall. All of that and more on today's State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio, Brian Mackey, IPR Reporter, and our guest is Dave Dahl, State House Reporter for WTAX Radio in Springfield. Amanda, let's start with you. Let's go directly to the budget. Give us the latest on what we're being told these groups of bipartisan lawmakers came up with.
Well, you do continue to have a group of legislators meeting on the non-budget issues, although I guess if you believe Governor Bruce Rauner, they are tied to the budget or at least state finances. But the quote-unquote budgeteers, so these would be legislators that are appointed by their caucus to really deal with the budget specifically, or various appropriation committee chairs or the minority spokespeople for those entities. They had been getting together, meeting for hours on end, and at least daily, in fact, and have come up with what they describe as a framework. They are very clear, want it to be made known. It is not a deal. It is not an agreement. It is an outline, the starting point for a path forward that they have come up with and now has been given to their leaders. So that's really one of the key tests. As we heard from Senator Staines there is the remaining key test about how does it tie into the turnaround agenda and an outer compromise for this broader issue that's really led to the stalemate, number one. But number two, what does the governor and the speaker, the Senate president, and the GOP caucus leaders, what do they all think about it?
So basically, though, it's what we've talked about in the past and what it would likely have to be, and that is some mix of cuts and some mix of taxes.
Right. And really, as you said, John, I mean, no surprise there. The cuts appear to be, for example, really at Medicaid. That's something that is not surprising. And then the revenue package, because, of course, a graduating income tax was taken off the table as an option. Couldn't have really been one immediate anyway, even it had gotten to the ballot. Instead, it raises the income tax, is what the proposal would be, from 3.25 percentage points to 4.85%, and then also would lead to a broadening of the sales tax and adding that onto a narrow group of services that aren't taxed now.
I think the key here, it's Dave, hello, that we had was the cut at the top of the show with Representative Fred Crespo backing far away from the idea that this is anywhere near soup. And that comment was made Thursday as some of the news started to get out about what was going on or what could be going on. And I know Rich from Capital Facts had the numbers. He may have been the first with them. And Natasha from Politico had reported early Thursday about a possible agreement being handed up to the legislative leaders in the governor's office. But the remarks from Crespo, I thought, were strenuous, that don't get carried away here. This is nothing more than a set of numbers, just as an example and for everyone to see if it was something they could salute. And in terms of how close we are to a budget, I think that might be a fraction of an inch, incremental step forward, because I'm not convinced they really want to do it.
Well, Dave, let me I think when you look back on this entire year and all the discussions that have gone on really since Bruce Rauner became governor, to get to this point and in the end they can solve this with basically a little bit of a raise in the income tax and a few other taxes and some budget cuts, seems like this could have been done a long time ago.
Could have if they wanted to, and I think the only thing you can conclude is they really don't want to. They could have done it a long time ago. If you had said a year ago, hey, it's going to be a year and there's no budget, I don't think many people would have signed on to that. But now we've gotten almost a year without one, and I think most people think that if not things are just fine, that we can go second, third, fourth just as easily.
Charlie, do you agree with that?
Well, I think it's – and I guess this is an indication of how bad things are, that when people say, yes, we're actually talking about this stuff, you look at it as being a sign of progress. And as Dave said, this is something that should have happened a year ago, and in normal situations it would have. The difficulty is you have kind of this battle of wills between House Speaker Michael Madigan and Governor Bruce Rauner. And the governor is insistent that he will not go along with any revenue increases. I mean, he acknowledges that they're needed. And I would argue that anyone who is well-versed in basic arithmetic will realize the state does need to bring in more money. But he says he won't consider that until he gets some of his turnaround agenda. And the Democrats have balked, arguing that some of the things he wants to do that would weaken the power of organized labor will result in harm to the economic well-being of middle-class families. And so that's kind of where the standoff is. Ultimately, I hope we will come to some resolution, and as has been suggested, it will have to involve bringing in more money through increases, likely in the income tax, because the income tax is the only tax that's broad enough and rich enough to bring in substantial amounts of money. And I think the budgeteers also suggested expanding the base of the sales tax to include some consumer services, which is another area that I think we could do to bring in revenue, and then there'll be cuts. And as I say, a year ago, everybody knew this is going to have to happen. And the question is, when will we have the will to do it?
Consumer services like, going to the barber shop or getting your grass cut, for example, like I think we were just hearing outside the State House bureau there, the lawnmower going past a little earlier. One of the things that I think you said, Charlie, the key here is everybody knows what needs to be done, but will the governor go along with, if it doesn't include his so-called turnaround agenda items, or will the Democrats go along with those turnaround agenda items? I'm not optimistic because once again, we had House Speaker Michael Madigan telling a local TV station here in Springfield this week his goal for the remainder of the session is to continue to do budget making without references to changes in collective bargaining, workers' compensation, prevailing wage. And he said, quote, "My further goal is not to agree with the governor to use the government to bring down the wages and the standard of living of middle class families." This is the same sort of rhetoric we've been hearing all along from the speaker. And somebody's got to move first, right? It's got to be the governor or it's got to be the Democrats budging on what they have said are intractable demands on the governor's part to pass his agenda and on the Democrats' part to pass a budget without tying it to his agenda.
Now, something that is – something –
we've seen this movie before, Brian. Well, thank you. Where the speaker gets a budget through and adjourns. The House has done its job. The House has passed a budget and game over. And then it would be up to the governor to say, well, no, we don't, or I'm going to veto it, or what have you.
Well, something that is going to happen this summer that in some cases has actually helped put an end to previous budget battles has been political conventions, national conventions. The lawmakers especially don't want to go out to Cleveland, Philadelphia, and sit there and be at parties and other events when they're still sitting there without a budget back home. Does anybody think that that could necessarily at least play into this and maybe lead to some type of, even if it's more of a temporary agreement, the idea of the six-month budget, something that gets them through for a while?
I would say no.
Well, and the Republicans have already, a lot of Republicans are already not going to the
right.
convention.
Including the governor. Including
the governor because what? They're well, talking about.
One of the things I wanted to ask you guys downtown, there were reports not just on what the budgeteers were doing, but there were, I guess, vague rumors about another group that's meeting to try and hash out some points of the turnaround agenda on workers' compensation, for example, on limiting prevailing wage, that would be a path forward, seeking some common ground, some concessions. What do you guys hear about that?
I believe that they do still continue to meet, and the question is, in part, as Brian had described it, in terms of who will move. Sure, there is perhaps room for a compromise on workers' compensation, and then it gets difficult because when you've had an impasse this long, does that make the stakes higher for needing bigger change if you're Governor Bruce Rauner in order to consider it a win, but harder for Democrats to give in? There have been indications that, for example, on the prevailing wage, there's a little bit of room there, or on local government, similar to perhaps what has already been done for Chicago Public Schools. But I think the question continues to be, is it enough? And then there's also the broader question where really this has become a war of personality and of politics, and where who's willing to give when you have a governor with millions of dollars to spend on campaigns. Democrats are not going to be keen on giving him any additional wins because they're fearful of what will come on the election front.
Well, that turnaround working group has been meeting, but we certainly haven't heard any details, or at least I haven't, unlike the budget working group. But I would posit that the governor either has not set or keeps changing the goalposts on this. What would equate sufficient turnaround items for the governor to be happy?
Maybe that's a reason for optimism, so that he, as you say, he hasn't made it clear, Dave, so that maybe he can declare victory with a smaller and smaller amount, perhaps. I can almost imagine if I'm going
but
to
But also
be,
Democrats say it's harder to work
to
with
know what
because
they
don't know, and that it's, it
right.
is this moving goalpost.
Right.
You'd think the mere fact that Bruce Rauner has been elected governor by a majority of Illinois voters would be enough. And the sun shines on Bruce Rauner's Illinois.
Well, they're all being a bit cryptic here. I mean, the speaker is also being quite cryptic on what he's going to do as well.
Well, I mean, the speaker just says no to all the turnaround agenda items, at least if it's tied to the budget. Mm-hmm. And I think that I could almost imagine, if I'm going to be optimistic, let's say that these working groups do come to, as Charlie has pointed out, workers' compensation, maybe even some venue changes for the way tort lawsuits. There are things that Democrats and Republicans could come together on if it's not rhetoric, just a matter of rhetoric tied to the budget. If they can, maybe they could come with to some business package that they'll pass, and then separately they'll come to an agreement. It's just, will the leaders get out there with their language that says, well, I'm glad now we can do a budget now that my turnaround agenda has passed, and then that sours the entire deal? Or, you know, imagine the reverse of that souring the deal from the Democratic leadership.
You know, normally I would say this time of the year, about 2 weeks away from the end of the legislative session, the scheduled end, the spring session, that usually there's still plenty of time to put the budget together and all of this. But there are so many big issues at play and so many unknowns, as we've talked about here. Charlie, I mean, it seems to me that next week's going to be really telling, I think, if they can get something done and get it done by the end of the month.
I would think so. We've got to get some movement starting somewhere. But to pick up on your comment about normally, I would say, and I've been watching this stuff basically since
God was a little boy.
Well, probably before many of you were born, since 1970. And always before, up until now, we were able to get something done. We've never gone this deep into a budget year without having a spending plan in law, and instead having our services being paid pursuant to court orders or consent decrees or continuing appropriations. So this is totally unprecedented. And so, yeah, Sean, back in the days when I was a reporter, for the 20-some years that I was a reporter for the Sun-Times, when you got within 2-3 weeks of the end of the session, you knew that all the rhetoric was kind of be tamped down. People were going to get together, figure out where's the common ground, how do we move forward, And then by the end of the session, the deal would be in place. Everybody would have something that they liked. Everybody would have something they didn't like, but they'd agree to move forward.
And we're not
in
normal.
We're going to be looking at each other.
Well, I want to point out Dave Dahl, Statehouse reporter for WTAX Radio in Springfield, is our guest on State Week this week. And Dave, let me turn to you on another piece of legislation. This did move through with bipartisan support, and it was money for social services. And these agencies have been waiting a long time for this. It would, I guess, fund about half of what they would normally get, $700 million or so. And that's passed both the House and Senate. What's the likelihood that the governor is going to go along with it?
Well, I don't know. Some would say that the governor is going to consider it and wait around. I'm surprised that it had such support with no negative votes, three present votes in the House and all a yes in the Senate. And the voices in my head, someone got to them during the committee hearing, asked them about this, asked the downstate Republicans about this. They didn't have anything to say about it. In fact, it passed out of the committee on a unanimous vote, leave for unanimous roll call. And so I think that was a bit of a surprise, maybe because there was no GRF involved. But I think it's clear that someone in the administration wants to throw some shade on what's going on here, despite the fact that everyone voted for it.
Why would the administration do that?
Perhaps because some of the other operations have been left out, possibly because vendors in the prison system are still unpaid. Because some of the state operations are not happening,
except
perhaps because they want those funds for something else, and perhaps because they're waiting for a real budget.
Well, as a matter of fact, after
the
legislation passed, there was a complaint that came out from the Republican political operatives about how, what are we going to do about the prison system, and blaming the Democrats for not being concerned about how do we pay for the food that we have to serve the inmates. There was an amendment offered to that particular bill by the House Minority Leader Jim Durkin, and it never was considered, and that amendment would have appropriated money from the state's rainy day fund to pay for operations at the prisons and some operations at Human Services. It also included basically $100 million to the governor to spend as he saw fit to shore up operational shortfalls in other agencies. And the Republicans were unhappy that that was not considered. But
if you try to ask the governor what he really wants, he'll resort to his campaign speech, which all of us have been hearing for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. And
well, what is it they want? Come on.
I thought that you mentioned political operatives, Charlie, as the state Republican Party put that notice out. Really
well,
quick.
And that's what they are.
Yeah, really quick on the timing there with that when that came out. And I think it's interesting. It is part of this messaging that we've seen now where the governor goes out to these events. He was at a child care center here in Springfield at Lincoln Land Community College. And he was talking about how important early childhood education funding is and how he wants to increase funding. And what didn't get talked about at that event was the fact that the very child development center where he was had a 50% decline in enrollment last fall because of the governor had vetoed the child care assistance funding budget and because community college budget in the state budget was not one of the things he signed. He vetoed that as well last year.
And I think so we'd be better served if all people would realize we already had an election. The governor won. Democrats have supermajorities. Let's lay off the campaign rhetoric and this hyperbole, which just poisons the atmosphere. It's time for them to act like grown-ups, both sides, instead of trying to score these cheap political points.
Well, and I was just saying, I think one of the interesting things that I think we're seeing is that the Republicans and the governor in particular are really trying to get to Democrats to share the blame now for the fact that there's no budget. Whereas, and I want to harp on this point, I've done stories in the past about, you know, the governor has long talked about a strategy of, you know, shutting things down in Springfield and using spending as a wedge to try and get the Democratic Party to take some tough votes that would weaken government employee unions. And now I think that, you know, we're getting closer to the election. We're having social service agencies shut down. We're hearing about universities laying off hundreds of people. I think that, you know, the Republicans are really looking to try and spread the blame around.
I'm with Charlie. There have been a couple of times in this administration where we've been invited in for the one-on-one interviews. And instead of being a one-on-one interview, it's like my own personal campaign lecture, which I've already heard. Yeah. And I think it's maybe it's time to talk about governing the state.
I will say, though, that that has become a trend in governors in Illinois to stay on message and stay on point, and that's something we've been hearing certainly since Rod Blagojevich through Pat Quinn and now Bruce Rauner.
I remember how maddening it was in trying to ask Pat Quinn a question in a news conference, and Governor Rauner, I guess if you're a political strategist, to his credit, if you're somebody who's a reporter, to our frustration, is the most disciplined politician I've ever seen. He is just able to really stick to his, talking points almost all of the time, and really is rarely ever driven off track in a news conference.
He does act like the camera's always on him, knowing that if he slips up or if he gets mad at somebody, it's going to wind up on YouTube and look bad.
Well, I'm glad that we mentioned elections, because it certainly segues right into the next topic here. And that is the redistricting plan that appeared to be headed for the ballot this fall. Maybe, maybe not. There's been a lawsuit filed. Who wants to take that?
A lawsuit filed, and this is what happened also 2 years ago when a similar effort was tried to get on the ballot and instead was knocked off. And in part, that was it did lose a legal challenge, but also there were issues with the signatures. So this time around, really a similar group. It's some big names, many of whom are minorities. You look at, for example, John Hooker, who used to be with Commonwealth Edison. It is a lawyer, is Mike Casper, whose name may be familiar because he is the attorney for Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, for the Democratic Party of Illinois, an ally of House Speaker Michael Madigan, though Madigan's spokesman says Madigan has nothing to do with this lawsuit, and his name is not actually on it. But again, Mike Casper's is, and it alleges that the writing of this, it is a complicated constitutional amendment that has been proposed. It would change how districts are drawn, is in fact in itself unconstitutional.
And this is the plan that came from a more of a citizens-based group.
Yeah, and
exactly. Because if you recall, legislators did try to at least made motions of getting their own redistricting proposals to the ballot, and none went forward. So this is one that
had
the
House approved
of
one plan
submitted.
And the Senate approved the other. And guess what? Neither agreed on it.
Yet they both voted for redistricting.
They can all say that they voted for it. Yes.
So if this doesn't happen,
well,
I mean,
the
we're
suit
back
is
to
challenging it. It's the petition is filed under the very narrow initiative allowed in the Constitution that says citizens can only amend the legislative article, and it has to be dealing with structural and procedural matters. And the argument that's being made in this current case is that because the proposed amendment would require the Auditor General to be involved in the selection of the committee, and because the Supreme Court justices, at least two of them, would also be involved in the process, this puts new requirements on those two offices, neither of which are part of the legislative article. The Supreme Court is in the judicial article, Auditor General is in the finance article, and therefore this proposal goes beyond the bounds of what's allowed in this very narrow window. There's a lot of other arguments, but that's what it boils down to.
Brian Mackey, I'm not going to say that we don't need redistricting and changes in how we do that in the state of Illinois, but what Charlie laid out there does seem like it has some merit possibly as far as from a legal argument.
Yeah, and it was a very sort of equally obscure sounding legal argument that followed it up last time around. They had said that if 2 years ago when it was struck down by a judge, one of the requirements was that if you're going to serve on this redistricting commission that draws the maps, you're not allowed to run for office. And the judge found, well, no, you're changing the qualifications to run for office in Illinois, and that is not a procedure of the legislature, as you had mentioned, Charlie. So, these are very technical legal issues, but it could well, come up again. And Charlie, you were there in the Constitutional Convention. It seems like the framers really did not want the citizen initiative to be a very big, powerful thing in Illinois.
Well, no, and I remember the argument at the time when they talked about the initiative, there were some people who wanted a kind of a wide open initiative as they have in California. And I remember one of the delegates, a guy named David Davis, who was a venerable former state senator from a very historic family, And he argued, well, supposing there's a referendum and the citizens decide we don't want an income tax, and then they decide we don't want a property tax, and then they decide we don't want a sales tax, where would we be?
I think that probably would get a lot of votes.
Exactly. And so that was the reason why it was drawn very narrowly to deal with, are we going to have single-member district or multi-member districts? How many houses are we going to have? Are we going to be unicameral or bicameral? That kind of thing. Although it was mentioned on the floor that redistricting at the convention, the delegate who proposed this very limited initiative acknowledged that, yeah, redistricting would be a topic that would fall within it. And so I guess what you have to do is come up with some plan that does not involve additional responsibilities for the Auditor General or the Supreme Court, or that does not involve putting limitations on who can run for office when.
Or find a judge who doesn't think that's a problem this year.
Or possibly change the Constitution ahead of the way. I mean, that would really be a long process to try to do something.
Well, and
like
the legislature
that
could change that. Oh, yeah, that's the legislature could
propose an amendment to allow the kind of initiative that they have in California. Well, I would hope not.
We're on to our notes from the field. Brian Mackey, we'll start with you.
There's news out of Champaign this week that a rape crisis center is going to be closing all of its services except for a 24-hour hotline. They did get a little nonprofit grant to do that. Yet more fallout. They're owed $200,000 in state money. Not a lot in the grand scheme of things, but just shows that there is a continuing toll as people fiddle here in Springfield while a lot of other parts of Illinois are burning.
Charlie Wheeler?
Well, in all the hubbub over the budget and the possible tax increases and so on and so forth, kind of sliding by the wayside was the fact that there was legislation considered in the state Senate to raise the legal age for buying tobacco products, be they tobacco per se or be they e-cigarettes and vapors, to 21 from 18. The bill fell 5 votes short in the Senate.
All right. Dave Dahl?
We're getting close to May 31st, and I think it'll be another year where at 11 p.m. on May 31st, they'll adjourn and we'll be looking at each other saying it's over. But they didn't do that either. And I see no urgency for them to get a budget done. They certainly haven't felt it so far. If they wanted to do it, they'd have done it by now.
Not the most optimistic tone there, Dave. Let me move on. Amanda Vinicky.
Couple of things. First of all, obviously we have an election for the U.S. Senate against incumbent Republican Mark Kirk and Democratic Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth. There is an ongoing trial, and that will proceed down in Southern Illinois regarding Duckworth and her time working under the Rod Blagojevich administration. Also reports that, say what you will and think what you will of Governor Bruce Rauner, but a suburban man took it too far and has been charged with leaving Governor Rauner a threatening voicemail in which he even threatened to kill the governor. So taking it a little too far in politics these days, and that has proceeded.
And that will do it for State Week. Members of our broadcast today include Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, Brian Mackey, and Dave Dahl, State House reporter for WTAX Radio. You can get a podcast of this show by going to nprillinois.org. You can also find us on NPR One. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.